Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the I&I podcast. My name is Dan Aspel. I'm the communications manager here at the Institute. And today I am very pleased to say I'm joined by Irene Fonseca.
Well, thank you for having me. And it's a pleasure to be here. And as we were just discussing before, I just regret that I don't have more time to be here. But it's better to have some time than no time at all. So I'll try to use it the best I can.
Absolutely. And the reason that you're here, Irene, is that you're part of the Mathematical Design of New Materials program. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, you're also the Kirk Fellow, the Kirk Visiting Distinguished Fellow for the program, which we'll get onto later in our chat. But for now, tell me a little bit about what you've been up to recently.
So, so part of my life is to involves a bit of travel, so after being here at the Institute a few weeks ago, I was in Jordan, in Amman, and then I went back to Carnegie Mellon. I had some PhD defenses, so the graduation is coming at the end of next week, and actually after I leave from here next week, I'm going to go to Oslo for the Abel Prize. I'm on the committee of the Abel Prize, so I'll be there, and we have the first woman Abel laureate coming, so that's very exciting. And right after, I go to Pavia for 2 weeks, so I could give you all my travel schedule, but it's busy. But
is that very typical for you?
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, I have to say that basically at the beginning of every academic year, I say this year I'm going to downsize the amount of travel, but somehow one thing gets in the way and the other, and then There are definitely places where you have to go because also for my own interest in terms of the scientific exposure and the networking and so on. But others you go out of a sense of duty, right? Mm. And so and to that extent, it ties up also a little bit with having been awarded a Kirk Fellowship, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, and you were telling me just before we started recording our conversation that you've lived in Pittsburgh since the mid-80s.
1987.
87, okay, so that's towards right. The end of the 80s. Yeah. And so that's very much home for you.
It is. So it's been, 31 years, going on 32 in August that I've been there. Before being in Pittsburgh, so my undergraduate studies were in Lisbon. I'm Portuguese, so I studied at the University of Lisbon. Then I had a 2 year. Then I went to the United States for my PhD, 81-85. That was at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. I went 2 years doing my postdoc training in Paris. And so, and right after, I got this position as a junior assistant professor at Carnegie Mellon. I've been there since. So
it's perhaps not something.
Changed.
Yeah, it's. I don't know because I'm not an academic, but I get the sense that travel is probably not the main reason people go into academia. And yet, so many of the people in your position that I've spoken to travel a lot.
Right. No, it is true. I have to say that I don't necessarily enjoy traveling a lot because I've done it so much. But it's the nature also. Well, I have to say it depends. I have colleagues who rarely travel, so it also depends on the way you do your science, in the way that you collaborate or not. Also depends on the areas, because some areas involve less collaboration than others. The area where I work is, I would say, it's quite interdisciplinary, right? Because I work and I discuss with engineers. I discuss with people in computer science. My work is a work that is very anchored on applications. And so, again, that requires knowing what's out there. being abreast of where's the forefront, not just in my area, but in neighboring disciplines. And that's a little hard to do if you're just, you know, locked in your office. Of course, nowadays with the internet and all that, I mean, you have all these things easily. But it still don't replace the dialogue, the discussion, the actually talking with people, exchanging ideas. And that most of the time requires one-on-one and, you know, personal contact. And so that's that. Then, of course, there is the part of dissemination, right, which is the reverse of what I just mentioned, which is me telling other people what I do in different ways, not only to engage other scientists and or engineers in what I'm doing, but also trying to inspire and encourage younger researchers or potential researchers in coming to STEM fields, in particular to mathematics.
Yeah.
And then again, that there's a human factor there that you cannot replace by doing it even online or on some Zoom or Skype or whatever. So you really have to be there. You have to meet with the students, you have to talk with them. There's this personal factor that it's important, and that is something that I've been doing a lot, and in particular when I became president of SIAM, which is Society for Industrial and Applied Math. It's the largest society in the world for applied mathematicians, and I took as part of my mission this engagement with students, usually at undergraduate level or graduate level, but undergraduate level in particular, because that's when you can still capture them right into the STEM fields. Once they are in graduate school, usually they know better what they want to do. And so being an ambassador, if you wish, for the field and for mathematics in general was something I took upon me as part of my mission as leading that society was. And so again, that takes a lot of travel.
Yeah, absolutely. And that leads us nicely, I think, into speaking about your engagement with the Mathematical Design of New Materials program, because you're a senior academic, you're very well traveled, you continue to travel very regularly, you're on a number of very senior committees. So you have a lot of experience in a lot of different centres and the way that they operate. What's your gut feeling and honest opinion of what happens here at INI?
Well, it's extraordinary, and I think that again, well, on one hand, I've been following what's going on here, not just by being here, because it was very just a few days, sometime a couple of weeks ago, and now this period, but also online. I follow the talks and who's been here, who are the visitors, and it's as I just said, it's extraordinary because the organizers managed to put together a program that is extremely diverse. And when I say diverse, I say diverse, and there are lots of checks in here, geographically diverse, if that's important. Maybe it is. Certainly in terms of the science and the expertise that they brought here, and I'll come back to that in a moment, but also gender. And it's remarkable to see the number of women that have been through this program. And again, it's very dear to me also, carrying the Kirk Fellowship. I think it's very important that to acknowledge that indeed there is a presence of women here in this program, that it's, I would say, exceptional. You don't see that often. I go back to my experience as president of SIAM. That's one of the things that we are very conscious of when we sponsor conferences and meetings, and SIAM of course has many, is to remind the organizers and nudge the organizers to look at the women out there and make sure that you have a good representation of women. Here, it's amazing. And that again brings back again the Kirk Fellowship, because it's very humbling that I was selected when you have extremely distinguished women mathematician in the program coming here, and I happen to be selected. So that is very, very humbling, of course, as I just said. In terms of the areas, the design of new materials spreads and draws its influence and has impact in a variety of fields, right? And you go from, again, you start with engineering and you end in through physics, chemistry, mathematics, all these combined coming together, and so that is reflected also in the breadth of areas that are present here in the program, and that is one of the reasons that, to me, coming here, it's very rewarding. Is exactly that I get to meet these people who, of course, I get to meet many of my friends and actually former trainees and are here, but also I get to meet people who I normally would not meet, right? Because they come from other areas, they live in other different circles, but coming to this institute, that's when all these circles intersect, and in 3-4 days you get to talk with people who you normally would not talk, nor would have contact with. So that is very important.
My assumption is that if you're working on a very specialized problem, that once you get into the breaking new ground, the progress can be quite slow and steady.
Right.
But perhaps when you're meeting people from completely different fields and they're filling in these gaps in between the circles,
exactly,
as you say, that can be quite swift.
It is, and it's inspiring, because sometimes you that brings ideas that you never thought about. It opens areas to you that you were ignorant of before. And by the way, I should say that this field is certainly not narrow. It's huge, and we are just scraping the tip of the iceberg. Actually, tomorrow, during my lecture, I'm going to talk about some of the issues we are beginning to understand in the design of novel materials, of new materials, and their properties, and how you can predict their properties and or understand their properties. Some of them, the engineers know well how to produce, but the rigorous validation of why those materials exhibit those properties and how we can manipulate them in ways that we can actually predict how they're going to behave in the future, that's where mathematics comes in. And we are still very novice in this program. It's a huge program that started maybe, I would say, in all the current vigor, maybe in the 80s. And I was very privileged, because that's when I got my PhD. So I was right there where it was beginning. And since then, I most of my research is still in this area. But not only. Again, actually, tomorrow I'm going to also talk about another area that I work with, which is computer vision. And the beauty of mathematics is right there, is that with the same tools, with very similar models, you can span completely different applications. Again, materials and design of new materials. And on the other hand, you have, say, denoising of images, and you're talking about two completely different communities, but there's a unifying theme, which is the mathematics behind.
Yeah.
And so with very similar models, of course, they will represent different things in different areas. But the mathematical problems, the mathematical issues, and the mathematical challenges may be very, very similar.
Universal, yeah.
And they're universal.
So is there any particular thing within the program so far which has captured your imagination or that you're excited for the future?
Yes. So one of the themes of this program has to do with two themes that are dear to me, and one is behavior of composite materials, and the other one is the defects in materials. These effects can have different names, dislocations, disclinations, and actually when I was here before, the week before, there were some of the researchers here are working in that area, and I did talk with them at great length. So the magic, if you wish, of the defects in materials is that they are not necessarily a bad thing to have, and actually by creating defects in materials you can change their behavior in ways that can be manipulated with very interesting technological advantages. So and I'll talk about some of it tomorrow during my talk.
Yes.
So these two aspects are some that I'm very interested and concerned with, and also the behavior of very thin nanostructures, which of course, as you know, everything from your cell phone to your laptop tends to be thinner and thinner, lighter and lighter. And how do you get about that, right? You need better materials, smarter materials. And but of course, with these technology advances, there are also challenges, right? Like overheating and problems like so. And again, that's where we hope mathematics can come in and help understanding and solving some of these challenges.
It sounds really fascinating and full of excitement, as you say, for
the future. It is.
If we return briefly to the Kirk Fellowship, or the Kirk Visiting Distinguished Fellowship. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned that it was an honour because there are so many other excellent candidates to choose from. One thing I'm curious about is how do you feel about the fellowship as a whole? As a recap, it was established at the beginning of 2019. The aim of it is to help celebrate senior or most successful participants in programs from underrepresented groups. Mm-hmm. And if we look at the five people that have been the recipients so far, that has meant women so far, who represent a smaller proportion of participants here and across mathematics, across the globe. How do you feel about that specialized award, an award for underrepresented groups?
Well, I think it's tremendously important, and I congratulate Mr. Kirk to have had this insight and this vision, because it does make a difference, and it makes a difference to younger women to have role models and to see that it's possible and it can be done. But I actually come back to this role model in a moment, because it's it has some dichotomy there. But so actually it's interesting, and I let me tell a little bit about my own career and how I got to where I am now. So in Portugal, as it's, I guess, in most European Western countries, women in mathematics is not unusual. Actually, when I was graduating in my undergraduate studies in Lisbon, we were the majority were women. What happens next is the glass ceiling, right? It's why is it you don't see them afterwards, right? So when you look at positions of prominence, of leadership, then it's mostly male-dominated. Now, and those, and then you may ask me, so, but if they were not there in the undergraduate, in the undergraduate studies, where did they come from then to fill these roles at the leadership level? Well, they come from the engineering branches or computer science, and they can then migrate into the mathematics. That's the way it works there. Now, in the United States, even at the level of undergraduate studies, you don't see many women there. So it's already there. The pipeline is all, not dry, but it's just trickling. So it's getting better. It's getting better, but it is it's still a challenge to find women in mathematics and to acknowledge the role of women in mathematics. And for that reason, I have to tell you that sometimes it's what people call implicit bias, right? It's not that there are not women out there, but, well, certainly there are not enough. Mm. That we all agree. The numbers are still quite low. I know the numbers in the United States. I think that we are getting close to maybe 30% in academia. Although I have to tell you, in my own department, for decades I was the only woman tenure track. I like to say that last year I was chairing a recruitment for a tenure track faculty, and I like to say that we doubled the number of women. Now we are two. So
that shows how statistics work. Right?
So now we had to be doubled, and I'm very, very proud of it. So, but you see, again, let me go back to when I was wearing the hat of president of SIAM. SIAM has fellows, and every year we have new fellows. So these are usually mathematicians who are computer scientists who have made an impact in the field in many different ways. And they are not necessarily just from academic, could also be from industry, but are basically those mathematicians who represent the field who we are basically looking after in terms of leadership and guidance in the both in terms of their scholar work, but also in terms of their impact as educators and service of other nature. When I became a president of SIAM that year, actually the year before I became president of SIAM, there was maybe, I think, one woman who was elected fellow of maybe a class of, I don't know, 10 or 12. And that was not 30%, right, if you go by the numbers. And I thought, well, I'm sure there are more women out there that could and should become fellows. So what I did was something which was effortless, which was I appointed a canvassing committee, and the name says it was to canvass fellows, formed by previous presidents of SIAM and fellows, and the current fellows at the time. And I said, well, just go out there and see, nudge people to nominate. You don't have to nominate, but just go after other fellows and department heads and deans and tell them, look at your faculty. Are there people who could be nominated? And so, you know, I mean, I was not asking them to do the nomination, right? And the thing is that maybe it was a coincidence, maybe it was a miracle, but the next year, we had more than 30% of the women were of the fellows were women. So I was very proud of that.
Yeah. So all it took was that small stimulation.
And it's just sometimes, and now it's a standing committee. It's there. The American Mass Society thought it was a great idea, so now they have something similar. And you see, so sometimes it does not take a lot. It just takes to, you know, just make a little effort and see that are there women out there who could also be nominated? Because you always go after the obvious. Mm. And sometimes it's not just necessarily obvious, but the talent is there. Yeah. The brilliance is there. You just have to nudge the right people to say, well, look at that person.
So that's the power of awareness.
Exactly. Yeah. So that is something that that I did, and I think it's very dear to me. On the other hand, you see, the fact that there are very few women in mathematics is also detrimental in terms of recruiting more women. And why is that? Because since we are very few, and especially nowadays where there is an interest in having diversity in committees, in boards and so on, those very few women tend to be, as you just said, I mean, a lot of I wear lots of hats, right?
And suddenly there's a lot of responsibility.
There's a lot of responsibility, but that may be detrimental because a young woman in my class may look at me and say, I cannot live the life you live, you know, because you have too many obligations. You travel too much. And that's not the life I want to live. So there's also some education there that's needed in terms of telling young women, and this applies not just to women, but to underrepresented groups, because if you go to other underrepresented groups, they have exactly the same issue, which is that there are so very few that they are requested to be participants in millions of activities and boards and committees, etc., which is to tell the young people that, you know what, it's a choice. I'm doing what I do the way I do it because I choose to do so. You don't necessarily have to be in all these committees and do all that to make a difference. Different people do it with different styles. That's the way I know how to do it, but it's not a necessity. And so, but that needs to be told, because you may give the wrong impression, and by doing so, you may scare away, if you wish, potential very talented young women. But I like to say that I like to see that it's the trend is changing, and you see more and more women coming through the ranks, being recognized, being appreciated, taking leadership roles, and so that's also very very rewarding to see that's happening. But there's still a lot of work to be done, but you know. We're getting there.
Well, thank you very much for that insight, because that's raised a lot of points which perhaps we haven't heard on this podcast series before. So that's a lot of food for thought. Tomorrow, of course, which will be Friday the 10th of May 2019, you will be delivering your keynote talk as part of the DNM, the Mathematical Design of New Materials program. So I wish you the best of luck with that. I'm very excited about it. I'll be here taking photos, which I will then associate with the article on the podcast, so people who are listening to this or reading can find them. Are you excited about the talk? Is it one that you've given before?
Very much. Well, I have given similar talks before, not exactly like this one, also because I'm presenting material which is newer than last time I presented a similar talk. But when I gave public talks, before, my theme is usually the same, which is the power of mathematics and the abstraction that mathematics can bring. Can be illustrated, as I will tomorrow, by showing that similar tools and similar mathematical ideas can be applied to very different fields with very different applications. And I think that is, I think it's a theme that resonates with many young mathematicians, and so I like to insist that that's very interesting, and also the fact that the math that I do is, and again we'll see that tomorrow, is one that it's comes from problems that I am confronted with from the applications, and then you basically distill them, and then you try to find what is actually the mathematical question that's behind, and in turn, by solving that mathematical question, often you realize that you don't have the tools to do that. So that opens also new mathematical areas or new subjects within mathematical areas that you think are well established, but there's still something more to solve. Mm-hmm. There is this mystery there that's associated to that, which is very interesting. And then, of course, there is the coming back and going back to the engineers and try to close the loop, and which not always happens, but often, actually not often, but sometimes it happens that you come back and say, well, you know, this does not quite validate what your simulations were showing us, but instead it does something else. And so, and then there is this conciliation of the two areas, and again, there's another step forward in trying to understand these in particular the design of new materials. I'm very privileged to don't tell this to my dean, but I'm very privileged to be paid to do what I do, you know.
Let them find out.
but I think that it's also part of what I think it's our mission here, is to actually to transmit that joy of and passion for what we do to the younger generations, and tell them, look, you know, it's extremely rewarding to do what I do.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. It sounds very exciting. I look forward to the talk tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Before I let you go, Irene, can we speak a little bit about this one last question, which I've started to introduce, which may sound a little magazine-y, but can you tell us a fact or a detail about yourself which may surprise us?
So I'm going to tell you two. One is that I had absolutely no interest in mathematics when I was in high school. Mm. I wanted to be a painter.
Wow.
So... which is actually... okay, so...
Do you still paint?
I do paint, not to the extent I would like to, because I don't have the time, but maybe one day when I will not be proving so many theorems. actually, I have to say, so I did have some interest in mathematics, but it was my own. So my father was a Navy officer, but his second passion was mathematics. So... and so there were mathematics books around the house when he was in college. So when I was a kid, I used to take some of those books and just, solve problems, linear algebra, calculus, without knowing that it was linear algebra and calculus. But it was my own in the silence of my bedroom, but not in school. I had absolutely no interest in mathematics. And actually, I did go to architecture, so that was a compromise with my father. So he wanted me to go to math, I wanted to be a painter, so he said, okay, architecture.
Halfway between.
You'll get a little bit of art in there, but you have some quantitative science in there. So then there was a revolution in Portugal in 1974, many institutions of higher education closed, and so did my university. For a few years, the School of Fine Arts. And so eventually my father convinced me to go to math just while I was waiting, and that's how I found myself in mathematics. If you would have asked me when I was 17 years old what I wanted to do, anything but mathematics. I wanted to be a painter. So that is one maybe not typical trajectory. The second that...
I hope there are plenty of 17-year-olds listening.
Yeah. Well, yes, you see, so that it is true. And let me just wrap up something there. The role that my professors had in college was fundamental, because they transformed someone who got in there and who had no interest, who was not going to class much, to when they took me under their wing, completely transformed my life. I started learning more, studying more. The more I studied, the more hooked I became, the more things start making sense to me. And that was that. That was the end of painting and the beginning of math. And it was the professors I had that in my first year at university that changed me and changed my life.
That's very inspiring to hear. Yeah. Should we move on to fact number two?
Fact number two. I was knighted in the Military Order of St. James of the Sword by the Portuguese president a few years ago. More than 20 years ago. So I guess I'm not a knight. I guess I'm a dame.
So I should be addressing you as Dame Fonseca.
Well, Irene is just fine. But but there you have. So.
Wow. Well, thank you very much for sharing that with us. That was a really fascinating talk. And as I say, I'm very much looking forward to your talk tomorrow. All of the details will be attached to this podcast and email and interview, rather, that we'll put on the site. But until then, thank you again, Professor Fonseca.
Thank you for
Dame
having me.
Dame Professor Fonseca.
Thank you for having me. Okay.